Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, just after 7 o'clock this evening, it is the DL debate with Brendan Devaney. He joins me on the show now. Good morning, Brendan.
All right, G-Man, what's happening?
Can you imagine we're prepping for a semi-final in 2 weeks' time, either Saturday or Sunday? I heard it was Saturday, but I noticed on the fixtures page it's still played either Saturday or Sunday. Do you know what the story is there?
Yeah, listen, I'd heard rumours about different dates, but I suppose we need it confirmed. I'd heard it was the Sunday, but listen, it's important, I suppose, for Donegal people because we have to plan for Dublin to get the news as early as we can.
Well, someone messaged me and says, when's the game? Is it Saturday and Sunday? I said Saturday, I believe. And then they said, oh, great, I'll book me flight. And I was like, whoa.
Don't do that. You and your big social media reach, you have to be very careful with things that go, Greg.
I was worried I'd end up with a bill from Ryanair. Let's talk through the weekend's action then. We'll start on Saturday, I suppose. And the big story, and maybe not as big a shock as it was made out, though it's still a remarkable achievement, Galway edging Dublin out for a point, and good value for that win as well, would you say, Brendan?
Yeah, well, listen, being a half Galway man, you know, I had a good bit of skin in the game. I had a great time for the Galway boys, and would know quite a few of them. And I suppose first time in 15 years, Dublin have lost a quarter-final, such as being their dominance. So just at Croke Park, we just keep thinking that it'll fall back in that setting where Dublin will find a way. But we've seen a more human Dublin. They were so ruthless and relentless this last number of years. Like, they just didn't make mistakes or very little mistakes. And they were so efficient. But we've seen a team, I suppose, at times in the first half when they pulled away from Galway, it looked like it was going to be a normal day out for them in terms of overturning this Galway team who were patched up. Now, that's it. Obviously, 2022 is only 2 years ago, Greg. Galway could have very easily been all Ireland champions. This is the same team. So I just think that we were a bit up and down with Galway. No one really knew. But if those players were all on the pitch, and they basically were, they still had the quality to beat this Dublin team. And when Dublin quivered a bit, I mean, it was amazing. If you look at the game in Castlebar when Mayo took it to them, you know, having Mannion and McCaffrey to bring on, and then it was taking them off. You know, it looked like they definitely got their tactics the wrong way around in terms of having that brilliance coming on to finish the game when it opened it up. I mean, they were struggling looking for them scores later on. Right? They couldn't seem to get them. And that said, you know, there's quite a few instances later on where they give away possession and Conor Killahan's last strike. He was almost at the D, Greg, for a player of his qualities. That's a complete tap over a point. Even in extra time, I don't know. There was something about Galway and the subs that came on for them. And as I say, the players getting through the game. We said it pre-game last week, Greg. If that Galway team that was patched up stayed in the pitch, they had a real chance. And it was a phenomenal victory for them.
Yeah, indeed. And opens it all up. Armagh v Roscommon, not as entertaining a game, I don't think. You know, Roscommon have had a great season. Armagh progressed to the last four.
Yeah. Listen, that was always looking like a potential, you know, I suppose, upset in terms of Armagh were the favourites. Armagh were under savage pressure. Like the Ulster finals, the quarterfinals, defeats. There's so much weighing on this team that have been on the go for so long. Indeed, the manager's there 10 years, which is very unusual in the modern game now. So they needed to get the semi-final because it would be progression for this team, particularly after losing the Ulster final to themselves. So it was a massive game for them. That said, Roscommon had put on a brilliant performance the week before. The sending off obviously ruined the game, I think, in terms of a spectacle. It gave Armagh such an advantage. I'd say the Roscommon players didn't perform to their level at all that we've seen the week before. And again, tough for Roscommon. Greg, this team really has never got a lot of respect. They've had a couple of big moments in every season, and they've always had a tough defeat at the end of it where they're left scratching their heads. It's never been a close game, and Armagh bossed that for them. So listen, it's big, big territory for Armagh going in against Kerry now. I mean, it's dream stuff for this side to think that they could make an All-Ireland final, because I think if they did that, even though you might think just making a final, but making a final for the likes of Armagh after everything they've been through would be a huge, huge occasion.
And I suppose they can go in with some confidence against Kerry, can't they? I mean, they've had a pretty handy passage, have they not, up until now? And, you know, Derry never pushed them too hard yesterday. Maybe you see it a little bit differently. But, I mean, it was a dire game. And you'll never see the criticism of Kerry that you... If that was Donegal playing Derry, we would just be dragged over the coals. But with Kerry, it's like, oh, it's an off day. It's just, you know what I mean? They just didn't have a great day. Whereas we would be disseminated and called all sorts of names down the country. But anyway, yeah, be that as it may, Kerry passed Derry. Armagh will look on at that and go, well, okay, we're in with a shout here, would they?
Yeah, yeah, there'd be nothing great. And if you look at the stars, you know, leading into that game yesterday, you know, Sean O'Shea and David Cleverden weren't playing well. And they didn't play that particularly well yesterday. Nobody is. The scores are coming from all over the pitch for Kerry, which has been unusual for them in terms of this season. Might suit them better. Listen, Kerry didn't want to be out, didn't want to be, I suppose, played into a Derry counter-attack system. So they were saying, right, we'll play it your way. And we've got the better forwards, which is how it turned out. And you can understand that for Armagh looking on, right, I suppose. We keep saying, which Armagh? You know, with Galway, with a few up-and-down performances, it was hard to gauge and get in this. Armagh's the same. I mean, even in games, you know, you look at the Ulster final, they were brilliant first half, only the absolute unbelievable skills of Oisin Gallan kept us within touching distance in that first half, and they played some brilliant football. In the second half, they went cagey as Donegal went at them, and we've seen the ups and downs against Derry and Celtic Park. That's that same Derry team which gave Kerry a game up into the last 10. You know, they destroyed Derry. Then they go down to Galway and they're passive again. So Armagh fans and the rest of us are struggling, saying, if Armagh go after teams, they have power, they have strength, they have all the ability of the world, but for some reason they don't always do that. So if they play that same tactic that Derry did, Kerry will beat them. They have to actually go for Kerry. Now, Kerry will love that because Kerry will want the football match. So if Armagh did, that could be set up for a cracking match. And as I say, Greg, if they play a passive possession-based against Kerry, Kerry will do the same and they'll have the better men to unlock the doors. And I think that's the key to Armagh, is they actually have a go.
And we'll focus, obviously, on Donegal v. Louth in a moment. But, like, is it unique in this championship? And it's all the counties, really, that were, I think, almost in the last eight. Like, Team A thrashes Team B. Team C struggles against Team B, and then Team A struggles against I was trying to explain that in my head. It's not coming out clearly, but there seems to be no consistency, right? So you might say, well, if you turned over Roscommon like that, you go into the next game because this team struggled against Roscommon and it'll be a walkover, and then you're getting, you know what I mean? There just seems to be a randomness. And even in the Donegal game, you know, the first half, a bit ropey, second half, a great improvement. So as you say, there's some inconsistencies within games, but certainly from game to game with a lot of the counties that got into the last eight.
Yeah, leading into this, I thought this was the first weekend, Greg, we could really trust teams. And when you think about it, I suppose we could trust Donegal. They did what they needed to do. So did Armagh. So did Kerry. And I think, obviously, Galway were well within the merits to go up and beat Dublin. So that was kind of, we were wondering if the Galway team, the injuries to obviously Comer, McDade and Walsh, if they could get through them, they had a chance, and they did. So I think previous to that, like some of the performances we've seen, if you like the Mayo performance against Dublin and then the first half against Derry, it's just like, what happened there? Like even for the likes of Tyrone, the performance against us, and then they go and beat Cork. And then you look at it then in terms of their performance in against Roscommon, and you're like, what is happening? And from team to team, game to game. So there's been a lot of up and downs with teams, as I say, Armagh's performance against Derry that I mentioned, and then their performance then after against Galway. So I think at the weekend there, we've probably seen, even though you're right about Donegal, first half, like giving away too many opportunities, particularly score chances. I mean, I think the first six Louth attacks, they could have had 6 points. They only got 1 point from out of our six attacks. We had five scores on the board. So we had the better forwards. We always knew that going into the game, Mike, but our worry would be against a better forward line that we can't cough up that many opportunities.
But are we the most consistent team going into the semis? When you think, what is it, one defeat really this year to Cork? I mean, obviously you might have some inconsistencies within games, but from the line and on the field, we seem to be able to change things, you know, in play. I'm not saying we're the best team left in it. Galway looked fantastic. But are we the most consistent team going into the last four?
Well, I'd say Kerry would be something similar in terms of they haven't been beaten. You know, we were beaten once.
But look who so we've played.
Yeah, well, listen, that's it. I mean, you'd say to Kerry, listen, it's not their fault. They've beat whoever has come there. So I know you might have said they haven't got to work it, but they haven't done much wrong either. They maybe haven't set the world alight as well. But that was one of those ones where, in the modern game, Greg, you know, you look at the, as I say, it's about getting across the line. But how much does our game suffer week after week with this get across the line one I mean, the Kerry lads just want to be in the semi-final. They want to get back 1-0 Ireland, get their title back from Dublin, as they would see it, their title. But they had it the year before, if you like. So that's the thing about sides like Kerry playing Ulster teams. No one wants to be caught out. And the Louth tactic yesterday was very interesting, because when they went zonal in a couple of games I've seen there, Greg, there was some points kicked from very easy positions from the opposition. And you could see yesterday that they worked on that. That they, when they dropped in, everybody was responsible for a man, and you could see players tracking Donegal players right across the line. So when they came inside the 45, there was a man to take them. The problem was it was one on one then, and we had so many players who could drop a shoulder and beat people, and nobody better than, obviously there was loads of them there, but I mean Patrick Mogan, I mean it was a Superman performance yesterday. I mean, out of this world. I mean, how do you stop Patrick Mogan when he's the whole pitch to play in? He's taking the ball from deep. He drops his shoulder and he's gone, and you just can't physically catch them. And then
he's almost, sometimes he gets the ball and it's almost, right, I've had enough of this.
Yeah, it just goes. But the thing is, he's unbelievable skill. And when he gets inside, you watch him, he just takes this little second to steady himself up, and he whips this lovely ball, and he can strike the ball anyway with his left foot on the run. Arkin, and if there's players coming on the block, he can tap it over.
Yeah. I think we're averaging around 18 or 19 points a game too, which is a decent return. No one could criticise this Jim McGuinness team of grinding out low scoring victories anyway.
Yeah. Listen, we're playing with so many forwards. I think if you're having any fear about Donegal, as we've mentioned before, we in the first half we weren't able to stop Louth attacks, and even though we had numbers back, we weren't getting enough pressure on it. Now, you could see at halftime the conversation was sad in there, Greg, because the Donegal defence was much tighter, and when Louth came inside the scoring zone, two, three, four players clamping in the tackling, so that was much more encouraging second half. So sometimes, Greg, when the game is so open in the end, it's hard to get set in that defensive shape. I mean, I was saying to lads there yesterday up at Croke Park, you know, the tackling, you know, you see players rarely getting actually tackled, you know, people on it, but there's so many little frees because players are so good in the ball. That pitch is so fast playing and players step away. So number one, they don't want to foul. Number two, then it's hard to get in to get a tackle because players are moving so fast. We have so many skillful players. But then at the other end of the pitch, we still have to have that. I mean, you've seen Conor O'Donnell was named late for Curran. So we basically were playing with, you know, Owen Bann, you would call a defender, even though he's an attacking defender. Outside that, your only out-and-out defender was McCall, was on the pitch when Curran came off. So you've seen the statement from Jim from the get-go. Conor O'Donnell was coming in and basically a corner forward for a corner back. And that was a great match for O'Donnell as well after his coming on against Clare, hitting a couple of points. Same yesterday. He's going to be a big plus going into this semi with Galway.
All right, stay there. We're going to talk about your guests. A brilliant lineup, as always, this evening. Sinead Breen, the Donegal County Board GEAPRO, is with us. Hi, Sinead. The big question around the county now.
Hi,
at the
Greg.
Moment. Am I going down to Croke Park on Saturday or Sunday?
We don't know as yet. We'd look it. We'll be there with bells on either way. Aye. That's it. You know, it's an amazing thing to be looking forward to.
Yeah. So when do you think we might find out, Sinead?
Look, I suppose we're all hoping that we'll find out today so that, you know, logistics can be organised for everybody. But, you know, we really just don't know as yet. The minute that we do know, it will be gone up on our website and on our social media channels. Mm.
Obviously, you're close to the camp, Sinead, on this journey. What's the buzz been like?
I just couldn't be prouder of them. I think they're unbelievable. I'm actually in awe of what they do because they've given the county back so much. There's so much positivity coming from it. And I suppose it's important that people realise what the management and the players give to this. It's like a full-time job every day, and they're all working jobs along with that. So they're a credit to themselves, their clubs, their families and our county.
All right, brilliant. So Sinead, people are saying what day the game's going to be on or not on. The bottom line is we don't know. We'll know this afternoon and you will have it up and we'll get it out there as soon as we know.
Absolutely.
We'll get the throw-in time this afternoon as well?
Well, hopefully, yeah, okay. That would all come in it. Could I just ask that if anyone is on Instagram, Pather Morgan has yet again been nominated for Player of the Week. If people could go over to the official GAA Insta stories and give Pather a vote. I mean, everybody's seen what he gave to the game yesterday. He was phenomenal. Superman, I think, DeVries after calling him. So it would just be lovely to let him win this again.
Of course, Brendan Devaney's got both of his phones out on Instagram, two separate accounts. He's voting.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And the Donegal GAA 50-50 is open for the fourth round. Just look, it takes resources to get these players and their management team to where they are. So if anybody could help support the Donegal GAA 50-50, again, that's on all our social media channels. It would be really grateful for any help.
No bother, Sinead. Listen, thank you so much for that. Sinead Breen there, County PRO. Brendan, Pádraig Hilferty is your wingman this evening. Michael Murphy's coming up to studio as well. Is it? Does Michael Murphy does commentate on the Donegal games, does he, or is it a coincidence of fixtures?
Different people go different places,
yeah.
Greg. It just depends on what. I suppose the four games at the weekend, they'll use a spread of people. So, yeah, listen, great. It's great to see him up there. He's a great analyst. And
doing well, isn't he? He's really found his feet, yeah.
For us to have him up, you know, obviously, Greg, see what guys you get, and likes Aaron Kiernan, and we'd be very close. We do a podcast every week. I don't like, because them boys do so many, I don't like, so I always like, it's only every now and then I would ask Michael, and he's very kind, he's going to come up to the studio.
It's
always great to be in studio too, Greg, you know, it's that wee thing of, it helps the conversation that wee bit more to have him up there. And of course, you know, it's 2014, Greg, since we're in an All-Ireland semi. I mean, it was just poor life. It's 1957 for them. So, listen, maybe we shouldn't, enjoy the moment.
Actually, just one quick question you might talk about this evening. What's the future for the Derry management here? Stick or twist?
It has to be twist, Greg. Listen, there's been so much around it. Now, that's it, Greg. The last couple of performances, I don't know where they came out of. When I was in Celtic Park that day, I was like, this is a disaster. They're going to get absolutely annihilated in their next game, and yet they came through it, and they still put up a show. So I think Derry could be dangerous next year, but after everything that's happened, is that, well, the dressing room was obviously pulled together, so there's an outside chance. A couple of weeks ago, Greg, I said not, and there's not a snowball's chance, but now I actually don't know, because, Greg, there's not that many high performance level people out there. We're just absolutely best. If we have Jim McGuinness, I mean, there's no other Jim McGuinnesses anywhere.
There's not
so
a queue.
He's Donegal, he's in there, we're lucky. Other counties, who is there? Do you look at people that's going to take you to the next level? That's a difficult thing to do. So, listen, it might be more about who's the replacement, Greg, than anything.
Yeah, that's it indeed, yeah.
Stick with twist, as you say.
All right, so tonight, Brendan is going to be joined by Pádraig Hilferty, sitting on with him. Michael Murphy into studio, which is great. Michael McMullen from Gaelic Live, he's on as well, covering all of the weekend's action, proper pros talking about the quarterfinals and looking forward to the semi-final pairings. Do you have Donegal favourites for a final position?
I think it's 50-50.
Galway
are one of his favourites simply because they've beaten Dublin. But anybody, I think, knows a football, right? There's absolutely nothing between these two teams to set up for a finale. It could be a brilliant game too, because Galway can mix it, and so can we, but we like to play ball. So they have been quite restrictive this year. People have been surprised at it compared, we say, 2022. They've played a defensive game. They're not conceding goals, but neither are we. Sean Patton, clean sheet again. I have to give a shout out to my club, man.
Yeah, excellent. And I think two teams that haven't played us for a while realise when they're on the pitch with us that we're a whole handling leg. We're a tough team to play against with the speed and what have you. Brilliant stuff, Brendan, as always, on air from 7. Brendan Devaney there. Mark Gallagher. Works here at Highland Radio, of course, but has other interests. He has a very popular YouTube channel, Mark Gallagher, and his partner, Asya. And he joins us now. Mark, thanks for calling in.
Morning, Greg. How are you? Good to see you.
Mysterious person, working in sport, doing all that stuff, the tech stuff, but also, lo and behold, in the background, you've got this really popular YouTube channel. How long has it been up and running?
We started in 2022. Mm-hmm. I used to live in China. I lived there for 5 years. And we were making this big plan to go traveling in South America. And when we were watching lots of YouTube videos about different countries over there, we came across a few channels and kind of were watching and thinking, geez, we could do that. So we decided to give it a go. And here we are a couple of years later with a thriving channel of our own. So all good.
So talk to us about the format of the channel and what you do.
Yeah, so when we first started watching travel YouTube videos, we found that we were kind of left with more questions than answers after them, because they would show all the beautiful places, but they wouldn't really give you, you know, proper information, even silly stuff like, you know, where to park, how much stuff is, you know, where the best place to enter places is. So when we were making our videos about South America, we obviously wanted to make them, you know, beautiful and like show the places in the best light possible, but also for the viewer to be more informative than your standard travel blogger, because they leave a lot of information like that out, which if you're actually going to go to travel to the places are really important.
And also high quality.
High quality,
in terms of the footage and the way they're put together too. If you were going to do it, you wanted to do it right.
Exactly. And we went pretty heavy from the start. Like, we didn't, you know, a lot of travel bloggers would start maybe with their iPhone and see how we got on, but we just kind of
got the drone straight out.
We just kind of woke up one day and said, right, we're going to give this a go. So we, on one payday, we went and bought a camera, the drone, and I got Asya the GoPro for her birthday, and that's still the same three devices that we use.
The videos look good, and it's important to. I'm not saying that they're the same as every other video, but there's a formula really to what appeals on YouTube and these style of videos. You know, lots of information, quick edits, keep it interesting, that type of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I must give credit to my fiance Asya. The editing side of things is her baby. Like, she's been doing that since 2022. Like, and I think when you start a project like this, you kind of have to be bad at it for a certain amount of time until you get good at it. Like,
so,
we've made.
So scroll to oldest videos first.
No. I'm not recommending that. No. So we just started making videos in China, and you know, you think you're great, but then looking back a couple of years, it's like anything else. Once you get experience, and then you kind of know what to shoot in the moments and what to say, and you just get better and better at it. Like, so now we've a couple of years of experience, and it's going well. Like, so.
And it's so previously, as you've mentioned, travel videos from all around the world, from China to Ecuador, Mexico, back home now, and the focus is on promoting Ireland, right? So, I mean, You know, this is an interest of yours, of course, if you can make money all the while too. But there is a particular motivation for you to sort of show what we've got around the world?
Definitely. As you said, like, I've been to nearly 35 countries now, and like, the decision to move back to Ireland was very much focused on, you know, where's the best place that we can continue this travel blogging journey. And I mean, like, I'm sure we're going to touch on it. We just released a new video about Donegal, and there's 20 or 25 places that we touched in there that could have been in any video from around the world, really. We've made videos about Brazil, Mexico, you know, all over South and Central America, India, Sri Lanka, Jordan, and our Irish videos are every bit as, stunning and spectacular as any other videos we've made.
Sometimes we need to sort of change the way we look at ourselves too, don't we? And I mean, it is amazing what we have to offer here. And that, you know, I'm sure in the countries that you've travelled, you've had that sort of life-changing experience, or you've got this affinity with this place that you visited, be it Brazil or Bolivia or wherever it might be. But people from other parts of Ireland around the world can come and have that experience here. And that's what you're showing them. It's a window into what they can sort of look forward to.
Exactly. And for me, I'm lucky in the respect that Asya's from Russia. So her coming to Donegal is her traveling. So like, when she came here and I was with her, it is her exploring a new place. And through the lens of a tourist coming here, I got to like admire the beauty of Donegal. And I suppose growing up here, you know, I would have only ever really seen Donegal from the perspective I've played at all these football pitches and in a show, and I know where everywhere is. And I've seen that it's a beautiful place. But when I brought Asya here and we travelled to, you know, the far-fetched corners of, you know, beaches and in a show, and or, you know, Malin Head or Hornhead, Sleeve League, the place is really are every bit as spectacular as anywhere else we've been.
And you know, obviously the common denominator is that, you know, it is Donegal, but you can have such a, almost like a different cultural experience depending on where you go as well too, not just the beautiful scenery, but, you know, Ardra or Bundoran, you know, Downings or Aranmore, though those two I find are quite similar, Tory, Inishowen, you know what I mean? Like, you can travel within this county, and many of us did over the last couple of years, and it's just like a completely different experience.
Exactly.
That's for my experience. Now, for others, it might go, Greg, you're talking, you know what. But for me, that's how it felt.
No, you're right. You're right. It's we've got everything here. Like in our new video, we have, you know, even places that you wouldn't even think, like fine dining experiences we have in the video. cliff walks, hiking, you know, some of the best beaches in the world. Truly, like on a sunny day, you'd do well to find better beaches than we have up here. Yeah, we have it all, honestly.
Yeah. All right, by the way, should have mentioned that the YouTube channel is called Something to Remember Ireland. So if you type that into YouTube, it pops up. At that point, it'd be great if you subscribe to the channel or even switch the bell on. There's not a lot of spam there. It's all good content. So well worth subscribing to as well and putting the notifications on. And also to, as I say, you know, the latest videos in Donegal, we'll talk about that in a bit more detail at the moment. But, you know, there's a lot for people listening to this show in Donegal for, to discover in that.
Yeah, definitely. That's the plan. Not only do we want to kind of shed a light on Donegal for visitors to the county, but a lot of people in Donegal might watch the video and think, geez, I've never heard of that place or I've never been there, but it looks amazing and that. In the video. So that's the plan. It doesn't, like, a lot of our demographic on YouTube would be Americans or, you know, people from the UK that might be thinking about coming to Ireland for the first time. So that's obviously a demographic that we want to keep. But also, if people from Donegal are listening to this this morning, just maybe give the video a watch and you might end up appreciating, you know, the beauty that is around us here.
And listen, you have fantastic numbers on the YouTube channel, but this is the kind of material people seek out when they've got a plan as well. So it's almost quality over quantity to some extent, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think people looking at your stuff, they're thinking, right, this is what I would do, sorry. I'm thinking going somewhere. Let me have a look at that. To what I think is interesting too in some of the videos is which you actually don't see as much as possibly you should, is sort of helping people coming here understand a bit of the culture.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not just there's sand on that beach, there's a cliff you can climb. It's to sort of give people a bit of insight into our culture as well.
Definitely. Yeah. We've posted a couple of, well, funny videos. We think they're funny anyway, about Asya's perspective on Irish culture. And, you know, we've posted, last year we made a video that actually was probably our most successful video so far. It's funny that we've, you know, spent all this time traveling and making these informative travel guides and spent a lot of time and money and energy and editing on videos about all over the world. And then when we make a funny video about Asya's perspective of Irish culture, it kind of blew up and became our most successful video.
See, the funny thing is, as you say, a lot of it's good stuff and serious, but one of the videos, it points out whether we equals small, like W-E-E-E equals small. Like that's really quite important. We were up in Belfast and we was with a girl who tends to use the word wee an awful lot. So it's a wee sandwich and a wee portion of chips and a wee cup of tea.
Mm.
And the person serving was, what is going on here?
Yeah.
What is going on? What is this person saying?
Yeah. We actually live in a really quirky country with a lot of different, you know, interesting nuances that you might not realize growing up here. Like, living in China, I met a lot of, you know, South Africans and Russian and people from all over the world. And when you would talk about these little nuances, they become really interested. And I think it's really important that we kind of appreciate our Irishness and start to appreciate specifically Donegal, but Ireland in general. Like, we really do have a lot of little quirks and really interesting parts of our culture that need to be appreciated.
Yeah, and also to celebrate and embrace our culture as well. Sometimes I think it's a historic thing that we can be a little bit shy about that. There's no shame in that whatsoever. Right, okay, so the YouTube channel is called Something to Remember. Type in Something to Remember on YouTube and it'll pop up. So the new video, talk to us about that. Is that live now, or is it being launched, or what's the story?
Yeah, we put it up last week on Rally Weekend. It's done all right so far. Yeah, it's got lots of hikes and hill walks and cliff walks and some, you know, ancient places. And the top five mightn't be as you would expect. Like, we actually made another video about Donegal a couple of years ago when we were less experienced. It was a top seven video, you know, you had your normal Mount Errigal and Sleeve League. To be honest, now looking back, we're a wee bit shy in that video, so we wanted to make a better...
User developing as well.
Exactly. And although that video did well a couple of years ago, it doesn't really represent us now. Like, we really wanted to make a proper video where we were, you know, talking on the camera and really giving people good information about the nooks and crannies of Donegal instead of just saying, climb Mount Errigal, go to Sleeve League, go to Glenbeigh Castle. Yeah. This one has a lot of information in it that we really think that can be useful to people.
And also, too, just for those who are not travelling abroad and want to stay in Ireland, there's videos too on, you know, Sligo, Mayo, travelling on a tighter budget, getting to see as much as Ireland as you can in a relatively short period of time. So there's a lot of sort of staycation videos there as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I hate that word, but that's holidaying within Ireland videos.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. I would definitely recommend it. Like, as I say, the past couple of years, I've brought Asya back for the last couple of summers, and our focus really has been seeing more of Ireland. And that's been great for me as well, because I think everybody could be guilty of admitting that you haven't seen as much of Ireland as possible. A lot of people, when they're working full-time schedules, when they get a week off in the summer, they head to Spain or Portugal or Italy or Turkey and kind of abandon the beauty on your doorstep, which I suppose is a bit cliche, but it's really true. Like,
well, I've never really gone abroad I haven't gone abroad in ages, but when I was travelling more regularly, June, July, August, the idea of going, and this is not jealousy or anything, but the idea of going and baking for a week, you know what I mean? I prefer maybe to sort of go out there when it's cheaper in September or something like that there. This is the place to be. Obviously, it'd be better if the weather played ball, but, you know, where else would be better to holiday? It's the cost, I think, puts people off, because the argument then comes that, oh, well, you can go to all-inclusive to Lanzarote for 900 quid and you can't get two rooms in Dublin. But there's lots more outside of Dublin to do here. There's good value to be had too.
Definitely. And if people want to choose to go and lie in the sun for a week, that's their prerogative.
No, I'm not judging them. It's just never been my thing.
Definitely. But from our perspective, like, our idea of a holiday now would be going and actually going out and doing stuff, finding the hikes and, you know, the mountains, and really exploring a culture and trying the local food and going, you know, off the beaten path, which in our YouTube channel, we really kind of focus on more off the beaten path things. Instead of just, you know, your normal run-of-the-mill touristy destinations, we like getting a bit more off the beaten path. So that's actually an important feature of our YouTube.
All right, good stuff. There's a bit of humour in there as well.
Definitely.
We need be. Go on to YouTube, search Something to Remember Ireland. You'll see the picture there of Mark and Asya, and you can go through all the videos there as well. Okay, brilliant stuff. Mark, anything you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I think that's us. Just something to remember. And I think Madonna had a song called Something to Remember. So if you type that in and Madonna pops up, that's obviously not us. So you might put in Ireland after and you'll see our two mugs pop up. Yeah. So
All the hits that you're giving Madonna, it's really fair.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly,
and as well as that too, it's always good to share these videos out and about, because that's a great way of inviting more people into our area, and the more people that come in, it supports the economy and what have you. So it ends up supporting us all. So don't be afraid to give these videos, firstly, a subscribe, a like, but also share them out as well. All right, Mark, listen, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate you calling in on your day off.
Yeah, thanks
been
for
great
thanks
stuff.
For having
all right,
me on,
cheers,
Greg,
Mark.
Cheers.
Right, so as we read in the newspapers a little earlier on, waste collection companies have warned they may increase prices for recycling bin collection to make up for the loss of plastic bottles and drink cans to the deposit return scheme. The journalist behind that article is environment correspondent with the Irish Independent, Caroline O'Doherty. And Caroline is with me now. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning.
Great to have you on. Right, okay, so talk to us about the background to this story then.
Okay, well, we call it the green bin. I know in some parts of the country it's a blue bin, but most households have a recycling bin. We'll call it the green bin for handiness. And that is collected by private commercial waste companies. And they're saying that since the deposit return scheme came in, there are less bottles and cans in the average green bin. Okay, from a customer's point of view, they will say, well, that's good, isn't it? Because we're doing what we've been told to do. We're bringing back to reverse vending machines and so on. The waste companies are saying, though, that within your green bin, there is paper, which is really low quality when it's recycled. So when they try to sort out all the stuff that's in your green bin and take out all the paper and sell it on to paper companies, they get very little for that. Other sorts of plastics of different values. What is valuable to them is your plastic drinks bottle, which is generally made of PET plastic, a good quality plastic. They say you can melt that down and reform a bottle about six times. So it's valuable. They can batch it up, sell it on to the manufacturing industry. The aluminium cans even more so, because they can be melted down and reformed into cans like indefinitely. So they're saying they're losing out. There's less in the bin. There's less of the bottles and cans in the bins that they collect. They have less to sell onto manufacturers. They're making less money. And they're telling government, and they're in talks behind the scenes about this, that they either want a subsidy or they want some sort of arrangement made whereby those losses are made up to them, or else they're going to have to turn to the householder and put up the charge for collecting the green bins.
I'd love to see the gap, if there is any, between the amount of bottles and cans that are recycled now versus the loss out of the recycling bin. You know what I mean? Because then we'd sort of find out how many people who were ordinarily just dumping them in the black bin or wherever are now taking the time to go and recycle them. But we can understand where they're coming from. And it's kind of really unfair on those that have been really good recyclers, isn't it? Because they were already being, you know, very, very careful and recycling their stuff. Now they're being asked to sort of get their deposit back. They have to drive to a shop potentially and recycle it there. And now they could be hit with increased charges for recycling. They're going to feel, that's a cohort of people are going to feel very peeved, I would say.
Yeah, because at the very start of this, when the deposit return scheme was being introduced, there was actually some hope, particularly among those who, you know, follow consumer developments, that there might actually be a reduction in the cost of the green bin. And for some customers, that might have happened. If you're the kind of customer on a kind of contract where you're paying per lift or per weight, and if you're putting out your green bin now less often, obviously you're paying less. A lot of people and a lot of companies use this fixed annual fee. So it doesn't matter how little or often you put out your green bin. So you're not going to benefit by putting it out less frequently or putting less into it. But there was this kind of talk at the start, well, if we're putting it out less often and it doesn't weigh as much, might we be in for a reduction in the cost? And, you know, turns out like, the reverse is on the mind of the waste companies, that they're actually going to maybe increase the prices to us.
And they're saying, well, why should we bundle all the tat for little money and others make the money off the good stuff? And I suppose, too, you've got us kind of early in this story because, as you say, the back channeling is happening now, and presumably the companies have put it on the table saying, look, unless you, as you quite well outlined earlier on, unless you help us here, this is going to end up on the consumer.
Yeah, these discussions are ongoing, and you know, they're a bit tense, I understand. You know, right at the start of this process, when the deposit return scheme was still being formulated, the government put out a proposal to public consultation. This is how we think it will operate. Now, when these public consultations happen, most of the public pay no attention, but certainly waste companies who have a vested interest in it did pay attention. And they were fairly happy with the idea, because there seemed to be a clause in there that was suggested that any bottles and cans that were left in the green bin, that A, they would be able to keep selling that as a recyclable material, but B, that they would be able to claim back the deposit on it. So I'm as a householder, I haven't bothered bringing it back to get my deposit back, but maybe the waste companies could. Mm. That was in the early draft of this whole arrangement. When the scheme was introduced formally, that wasn't there. So we're not quite sure what happened, why that was maybe shot down or omitted. But that certainly is a bone of contention between the waste companies now. Maybe if that was reintroduced, it might appease them. But they are saying they want the loss made up. The Department of the Environment, speaking on behalf of the government, is saying, you know, we don't know what that loss is, the question that you asked earlier. And we want to get some research done on that first before we concede that there is a major issue for the waste companies. The waste companies have put a value on, they say they'll be losing at least 5 million a year. You know, they are big companies, so maybe that's not a huge amount, but it's still 5 million they're not willing to lose without being compensated by us or the state.
Yeah, plus they might argue
via our taxes.
They might argue, look, you wanted to see a certain level of recycling, and without us you couldn't have achieved that, and now you've taken off one of the better revenue streams for us. So I think they've a decent argument there. It'll all work out, I'm sure. Caroline O'Doherty, thank you so very much for your time today. Take care. Caroline is an environment correspondent with the Irish Independent. I saw her in Dublin on the last time we were down last weekend, and I hadn't seen it before, and I couldn't have seen it before because there was nothing to it. But it was really sad. I think it's sad. It is sad. I'm not sure if I mentioned it before, but what you're seeing now is... what I did see is, I don't want to categorise someone as homeless, if you know what I mean, because they may not be, but they appeared to be down on the look, however you might phrase it, without offending anyone in this day and age, but I think you know what I'm saying. And they were bin diving for the plastic bottles. There was two older ladies, they were quite, you know, thin, emaciated. One of them wasn't, to be honest with you. I did feel sorry for them. But they were literally squeezing in. Do you know that tiny little narrow gap in the bin? Squeezing in through that as much as they could to retrieve plastic bottles and cans so that they could presumably go and recycle them and gather whatever money there might be in it. And we haven't had that scheme in for long, but that is a phenomenon. Bin diving for plastic bottles and cans. I mean, if that's how they're going to get, if that helps them, there has to be a better way of doing that, doesn't it? So that people don't have to put their hands into, and they didn't have gloves on, that have to put their hands in all that crap that would be in that bin to retrieve the plastic bottles and cans. There has to be a better way, but it's, I think it's a really poor reflection in society that people could end up being so desperate on a very busy main street to be rooting around in bins and retrieving plastic bottles and cans. A caller says, why was the national anthem not played at the start of the game yesterday? I kind of got the impression that that was a technical fault. It was played ahead of the second game, and it was obviously on the running. It was obviously on the run list for the commentators because they referenced that. So I don't know what happened. I would say it was probably a technical issue. No one was singing it. It was being piped out the speakers. If I were to guess, I would say someone's laptop wasn't fired up or something and they simply weren't able to play it out. As I say, that would just be my guess, and that is all we're talking about. Okay, we're going to be talking about blood donation, and it's a hot topic at the moment because the Blood Transfusion Board are very actively seeking people to become donors, or if they are donors, to donate, particularly before they go on holiday. There are short supplies and they need as much as they can. But it's not always as easy as you might want to give blood. And we'll have more on that after these messages. Is it just me, or are the nights drawing in a little bit? It does feel like that. Right, Connell's with me now. Hi, Connell.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to speak.
Yeah, read the blood donations. Read the blood donations. I mean, maybe I'm missing out on something vital here, but I've given between 60 and 70 blood donations one way or the other over the last, since I was 18, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I reached 70 then, you had to go to the doctor and get a note saying that you were eligible, you know, to,
right.
from a health perspective. But I think, I mean, you know, if you're well and you're 70, I mean, you know, I think if you're going there every 6 months and giving blood and you're in good health, I mean, I know you can't give it after 80, but I'm not saying anything wrong with that at all. But if you're in good health and you're 70, and I particularly mean, my blood group is ORH negative. It's a universal donor. And I would get texts back to say that my blood was given to such a person, you know, in such a hospital and all that. And I mean, you know, having to go to the doctor and get letters and that when you're well and you're fit as good as you are, you know, and I think it's a bit restrictive, you know.
It's a barrier, Connell, a barrier that arguably shouldn't exist. You know, I mean,
well, maybe there's a reason. Maybe there's a reason for that. I'm not a medical person. Maybe there's a reason for that. I'm not seeing, you know, but when you have been a sort of, when you have given it since you were 18 and you get that and you just say, now you have to go to the doctor to get a letter that. But if you're going there every 6 months and the test your the sample of your blood anyway, and if you're well, I mean, you'll soon know yourself if you're not well and you're not fit to give it, you know.
Mm. It says here, if you are 65 to 69 and you've donated in the past year, you can give blood. If you're 70 years or over, you must have donated in the past 2 years. So actually, you couldn't become a donor after 70. And you must obtain, as you mentioned, an annual medical cert of fitness from your GP. Which is... And now, during COVID-19, over 70s were unable to give blood, which I actually didn't know that, which is quite interesting.
I don't know, but I mean,
anyway.
So far I'm in good, you know, I'm in good health. And I would like to have given it, you know, because it's a good space. If you're living between 70 and 80, you can give it up to 80. But, you know, it's kind of putting people in boxes about their health. You know, it's kind of age, you know, that you're not, you could be 70 and you could be in very good form, you know, and... You would like to do it
in Britain. So if you went up to Britain and Northern Ireland, if you went up to Derry, you can give blood over the age of 70 as long as you remain in good health and you've made at least one full donation in the last 2 years. So no certs required in Britain and Northern Ireland for some reason.
No, and as I say, you would like to give it because it's one thing that you can do, and you know it's one of the things that you can do in life maybe that benefits somebody else greatly, you know.
Mm.
And it doesn't do you any harm either. I think it only sharpens you up, maybe your good appetite for a while after, and building up your blood again. And you're eating a bit of good food, and you eat good food before you go on to give the blood. So your strength is good, you know.
Yeah, of course. And as I say, yeah, I mean, as you say, sorry, 65 blood donations. That's remarkable, Conal, and well done to you.
I mean, well, they gave me first when I was 18, you know.
Yeah, but that's an awful... So it's pretty much you're going at it once a year by the shouting. But that's helped an awful lot of people down the line, Conal. It's remarkable. Well done to you. And I hope that doesn't come across as patronising. I think it's a fantastic
thing to achieve. I know, it's all right, you know.
But then now all of a sudden you need a medical from your GP to give blood, and you're such a loyal donor, it kind of is a little bit of a barrier, or some might even see that actually is a bit of a slap in the face. Go ahead.
You know, when you're in good health, if you feel you're in good health anyway and you're doing all the normal things, you know that, like, I mean... You know, you might get another 5 years given it, sort of, you know. But, like, it's people have enough to do, and doctors have enough to do without going and getting a medical test checked on that, see, can you give blood? Because, as I say, when you go give blood, they're taking a small sample out of your finger anyway, and they're testing it anyway to see how you are, see is your iron, and see your anemic or whatever you're, you know. And if you're going there every year, sure.
And as I say, it doesn't appear to be the rule in Britain at all, so I don't know why we're different here.
No, but as I said, the reason I rang was because when they're so scarce of it, and particularly the blood group that I have, Rh negative, when they're so scarce of it, you would like that it would be made easier for you, you know.
For sure. Okay, well, listen, just to help out as well, I'm going to read out where people can give blood donations in Donegal this week. Thanks, Conal. Take care of yourself.
Greg, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you. Thank you for what you do as well. It is actually quite remarkable. Over 65 donations, and now because he's over 70, you have to get an annual medical, but I don't think that's the case in Britain. I can't see anyway on the Give Blood website there. Something we'll pursue a little bit. So in Buncrana, there is a shortage of blood if you do give blood or can give blood. Buncrana, Inishon Gateway Hotel, today between 6:30 and 20 to 10. Tomorrow afternoon, 2:30 to 5:10, and from 7 to 9:40 in the evening. In Carndonagh on Wednesday, the community school in Carndonagh, 2:30 to 5:10 on Wednesday, and also in the evening, 7 p.m. till 9:40. And on Thursday, 2:30 to 6:40. Please call 1-800-731-137 for more information. And before you turn up or contact them, no harm in checking giveblood.ie, because there's a questionnaire there that should make it clear to you whether or not you can donate. There's a lorry off the road between Ballyhooly and Galdonna Junction. Traffic delays approach that area with caution. No reports of any injuries. They only play the national anthem once on match days, so it's played before the second game. Really? Because the commentators were waiting for it. I don't get that. Okay, but listen, I'm learning today. Every day's a learning day. But apparently they only play it before one of the games. Surely play it before the first one. And then it covers the both, no? I am on Solpadol tablets. Is it okay for me to donate blood? Unfortunately, we don't just have a blood expert on at the moment to answer that. Hi, regarding the deposit return scheme, it really annoys me. Shops, cafes, takeaways, charging you 15 or 25 cents on the cans and bottles. It cannot be deposited in the machine as they do not have the R sign, only for recycling. This is happening quite a lot. Wonder why it's being let happen. Interesting. So maybe, shall we say, they're sourcing these bottles from elsewhere but still have the charge. How can you be sure, though, the deposit is on these bottles or cans? Some might come in from Northern Ireland, which wouldn't have it, but I wonder how one could be sure if that's just not the price they're charging, or there is an additional 15 or 25 cent deposit. We were chatting to a lady earlier on who was out on her hollybobs and went to hire a car but couldn't hire a car because her licence was out of date. And ironically, she'd been in holidays since the licence was out of date and had no issues that time. It was an oversight. But this caller says, Greg, my licence is out in August and I got a reminder 2 weeks ago. Okay, so reminders are sent out. Does anyone know if the tickets for Donegal in the semi-finals is through clubs or Ticketmaster? Ticketmaster is a much fairer system, whereas through clubs, they tend to go to who you know. Yeah, well, there's a bit of that. I don't know the answer to that question. I would say maybe it hasn't been fully decided yet. Who is to say? That's where we have to leave it on today's 9 till noon show. Stay tuned. John Breslin, if you're listening live, is coming up around the Northwest after the news at 12. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. For me, Greg Hughes, and the team, have a wonderful day.